high above the skyline of our cities, silhouetted by the dawn's early light, the Black Eagle soars. The Black Eagle calls upon the powers of truth, honesty, and hope to expose the forces of injustice that plague our streets. The message of the Black Eagle is clear. Don't allow yourself to be undervalued, underestimated, or marginalized. And above all, speak your mind. Now, live from the Eagle's Nest in Washington, D.C., ladies and gentlemen, Joe Madison, the Black Eagle.
That he can fly with such terrific speed that his wings can be heard long or in the air. He's swift.
You can pray until you faint, but if you don't get up and try to do something, God is not going to put it in your lap. And there's no need of running and no need of saying, honey, I'm not going to get in the mess. Because if you are born in America with a black face, you are born in the mess.
April 22nd, the year 1933, Norman Hill, civil rights activist, labor leader, was born in Summit, New Jersey. He served as the legislative representative and civil rights liaison in the Industrial Union Department of the AFL-CIO, was involved in the issue of raising the minimum wage. He was also the East Coast Field Secretary for the Congress of Racial Equality, and he headed the A. Philip Randolph Institute for many years. I worked with Norman Hill, a little under the weather now, but today is his birthday, April 22nd, 1933. And if he's listening, happy birthday, Norm Hill. Manfred Berg is professor of history, Hildenberg University, Germany. And he's not in Germany. He's actually sitting right here next to me. The book, Popular Justice, The History of Lynching in America. So the question, and you were reminding me that that you had interviewed me or talked to me in reference to an earlier book that you had written about the history of the NAACP, or at least one aspect of that history.
That's correct. That was my first book on the NAACP entitled The Ticket to Freedom, the NAACP and the Struggle for Black Political Integration. That was published in 2005. And I've had a long-standing interest in the black freedom struggle, the civil rights movement, and that also was obviously what brought me to the history of lynching.
Well, the first question is why? What stimulates that interest?
Well, I've always been interested in American history. And when you come to the United States, or at least when I first came to the United States on a professional basis, which was by the mid-1980s, you sense that race relations are very central to understanding the history and culture of the United States. And if you study the history of a country, you want to understand what makes it tick, so to speak. And in that sense, I thought that that would be a great project for myself to busy myself with the history of race relations, the civil rights struggle, and virtually all other aspects that are concerned with those topics.
When you decided to do a history on lynching in America, where did you or where do you start?
Well, you start with the question, what are the roots of this practice?
And what did you find out?
Well, basically, I make a three-pronged argument. I'm arguing that there is the frontier idea that people who lived on the frontier in the old days had no choice but to take the law into their own hands. Then there is, of course, the whole complex of racism. Obviously, in the late 19th and early 20th century, the vast majority of all lynching victims were Southern blacks. But there's also a third complex that is often overlooked, and I think that is neatly captured in the title Popular Justice. I think, and I argue, that there is a peculiar type of grassroots democracy involved here. It's the claim of the people, of communities, to mete out the kind of rough justice that they think fits the crime. And the interesting thing is, you look at the history of lynching, it's not that that there is no criminal justice system. Actually, most lynching victims are seized by mobs from jail.
From the criminal justice system.
Yeah, from jail.
So in other words, there might have been a charge made. Then the victims are arrested.
Right.
And then mob justice takes over.
Exactly.
Where those victims are taken out of the criminal justice system.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's that local communities believe, or parts of those local communities believe, the state, the criminal justice system is corrupt, it is inefficient, they will not administer the kind of swift and rough justice that we think will fit the crime. And of course, with regard to the history of lynching in the South, it has a very strong racial component.
I was going to be my next question, Professor, and that is, did this only apply, this swift mob justice, only apply to blacks in America?
It did not. One of the features of my book is, and that I look at the history of lynching from the colonial era to the aftermath of the Second World War, and that I look at other groups too. Of course, there were quite a few white people were lynched, and there were also Mexican victims in the Southwest, and also quite a good number of Asian, Chinese victims who were lynched in California and other parts of
this was during the immigration, building of the railroads,
exactly,
that type of thing.
Exactly. And also, every now and then you have very peculiar cases. In 1913, for example, a Jewish factory manager by the name of Leo Frank was lynched in Atlanta, Georgia, for the alleged killing and rape of a young girl by the name of Mary Fagan. And obviously, it was a mistrial. He was sentenced to death, and then the governor of Georgia commuted his sentence because he was convinced that this had been a miscarriage of justice. And it was a very vociferous campaign going on to lynch Mr. Frank, and eventually he was seized from the Georgia State prison and was lynched.
But so he hadn't even though his sentence was commuted,
yeah,
he hadn't gotten out yet.
No, he was still in prison. It was commuted to life in prison.
Oh, I see, to life in prison, but that, okay, so commuted was the death penalty.
Yeah,
okay,
right.
But he had to still go life in prison.
Yeah.
And that wasn't good enough.
It was not good
enough. And was this a state prison?
It was a state prison, yeah.
So the question then has to be asked, even those with it, did you study or discuss in the book those that were even officially part of the criminal justice system, did they somehow cooperate with the lynch mobs?
Oh, very often so. The a major part in my book is on the role of sheriffs. Southern sheriffs in particular often cooperated with the mobs because they had nothing to fear. There was no legal retaliation. They needed to fear. And they often shared the sentiments of their constituency. After all, they were elected. But interestingly enough, what I found from the 1920s onward, sheriffs become more conscientious. They protect their prisoners. They often hold them away for safekeeping. In my view, this is one of the major factors that leads to the end of, to the slow but steady decline of lynching that occurs from the early 20th century onward.
Well, the obvious question then, Professor Berg, is why? I mean, why did sheriffs take, let's get that answer on the other side. I have to take a break, but let's get that answer on the other side. So what changed? Why did sheriffs decide to do that? And well, I'll get an answer. My guess is Professor Manfred Berg. He studied history, political science, philosophy, law at Hildenberg. He is a very prolific writer and a brand new book. Matter of fact, you can go on our website, joemadison.com. The book is up already on our bookshelf, selected reading. Popular Justice, A History of Lynching in America. And we'll talk also about, let's talk about the, at what point in American history did we have a rash of lynchings? And also the fact that Congress, the role that the Congress played in not being able to pass an anti-lynching law. I imagine that's very much part of your book, too. And we'll get into it. And we'll take, I tell you what, your questions, your comments, 1-866-801-8255. We will open up the lines. They're open now if you'd like to call in and join this conversation. Here with Madison on The Power. The book is titled Popular Justice, A History of Lynching in America.